Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Unmanned aerial vehicles, or drones, equipped with video cameras are finding expanded use for infrastructure inspection. They can cover large areas in sometimes challenging circumstances, giving a truly bird's-eye view of critical infrastructure systems that may be costly to observe with on-the-ground methods and that may present high risks if they fail. To tell us about his experiences using a remotely controlled drone to inspect flood control infrastructure, we have Kevin Lewis, who's with Denver Public Works Department. Kevin, thanks a lot for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
So first, can you give us a sense of what the functions and responsibilities are of your unit in the Department of Public Works?
I'm a senior engineer with Denver Public Works Wastewater. We're involved in the management of the city's flood control infrastructure, which involves large water detention facilities and rivers and streams. Many of these facilities are located in difficult to access or undeveloped natural areas. So they're difficult to access, they're difficult to get to, they're also very large. So we typically are involved with inspecting those on an annual basis to assure that the flood control system ensures the integrity of the flood control system.
And how are you using an aerial camera for infrastructure inspection now?
Specifically, the infrastructure that we're inspecting involves detention ponds and rivers and streams. In a typical detention pond inspection, we want to look for any clogging at the outlet structure, any kind of clogging or impediments in the outlet structure, the primary and secondary spillways, check their condition. We look for any berm erosion, and then we also look for general soil erosion and vegetation in the bottom. In a typical river stream inspection, we're looking at the storm pipe outfalls, the condition of the bank around the head wall, and then also just the general condition of the riverbank overall.
How did you do this before you started using unmanned aerial vehicles?
Typically, we had to do everything by foot. We had to get down. Frequently, we were in hip waders, getting down into the water body. In order to get a good sense of the condition of an outlet structure, for instance, you have to be basically in the water body, which is very dangerous and inconvenient. There was some risk there. And a lot of these streams are in very inaccessible areas. They're large, natural, undeveloped areas. And they took a lot of time and effort to do these inspections.
Have you gone over to, let me say, 100% use of drones?
No. We anticipate using this for probably maybe about a third of our infrastructure inventory.
How does the process work? So when you say a third of the inventory, are there certain features and facilities that you're looking at with unmanned vehicles and some that you're looking at on the ground or in the water?
Frequently in these natural areas, there's a lot of vegetation, trees, shrubs that block the view of the aircraft getting in and being able to see. If it hits a branch or a limb or something like that, it could fail the propeller and drop into the water. So there's some of that we have to deal with. So we have to have a very kind of wide open natural area free of any kind of obstruction like that.
And are you using this technology for the annual inspections as you describe? Or are you also using them on demand where there might be an issue?
We will be using them on demand as need arises, I anticipate.
Just going back to what you said, that you're focusing this technology on certain kinds of environments, have you had the experience of losing a vehicle?
I did clip a limb once. Luckily, I wasn't over a body of water. It was in a dry detention pond. It clipped a limb that busted one of the propellers, and I was able to land it, but it was a hard landing, and it tipped, and it was just basically a hard landing. It wasn't anything critical.
So the way you're describing it, it sounds like you're operating the vehicle. Is that correct?
Yes, from a remote control device.
Yes, and how did you learn to do this? Was there special training? Was it something that right out of the box you were able to do?
It was mostly out of the box, but at the advice of our vendor, we purchased a simulator software, which has been very helpful, and I would very much recommend it. It's a software where you upload it to your computer, and you also use the remote control, the actual remote control of the aircraft that you're using, and it offers simulated experience of one of these quadcopter-type aircraft. It gives a really good sense. You can adjust wind speeds, wind locations, landscape, and it gives a very real sense of the obstructions that you'll encounter in the real environment. Very, very helpful.
So that way you can develop the skills and apply them to real operations.
Very much. In fact, I would go to say I think the simulator software is actually much more sensitive than using the real quadcopter system. So we got to testing ourselves with using the simulator, and once we were able to get to a certain proficiency with the simulator, then we went out and used the real aircraft, and I noticed that we were much better at using the real aircraft than we were at the simulator. So it was very, very helpful. And it was only about, I think it was $79 we paid for this.
And what's the vehicle itself that you're using?
Well, I have a personal one that I use. I love this technology so much, I went and bought one for myself. It's a DJI Phantom Vision 3. It's a quadcopter type aircraft. It's about 18 inches square by about 12 inches high, weighs about 3 pounds. It has a GoPro equivalent camera that offers 14 megapixel stills. The Vision 3 has the 4K video technology. It costs, with including accessories, extra batteries, case, carrying case, came to about $2,000. When you're operating it, the pictures and video are recorded to an onboard SD card. The first-person view, what you see, is via a communication technology, patented communication technology they call Lightbridge, the DJI technology, that comes back to an iPad tablet or an iPhone. That offers the first-person view, they call, which you see what the camera is seeing, and that's how you focus in on your subject matter.
Presumably you'd need to control the vehicle, that view.
And to photograph your subject.
Yeah, but otherwise you wouldn't know what the vehicle's doing if you didn't have that first-person view, I would think.
Oh, no. We have to stay within eyesight of the aircraft. That's an important regulation in operating these. You always have to maintain eyesight of the aircraft. They say the range will go up to around 2,000 feet or even further, but typically after about 1,000 to 1,200 feet, kind of lose eyesight, so we have to maintain that eyesight. So I can be within 1,000 feet of something and still be able to get a good sense of where the camera is and then use the FPV or the first-person view just to photograph or videograph my subject matter.
And is the primary value of this the video that you get back and you can look at in a calmer context, or is the real-time view really critical?
It's both, equally. You know, we need to have video documentation we need to maintain for posterity purposes, really, or for later, you know, evaluating the condition over time. We have to have that. The DJI Phantom Vision 3 that I have offers a very good first-person view that you can use for real-time inspections if necessary. It does have the ability to identify things that you normally couldn't see. And so you can use it for, like, reconnaissance-type surveillance if necessary.
So with a roughly 1,000-foot radius limitation, does that still keep you out of the water and in safe, dry areas when you're doing the inspections?
Yes, it does. One of the larger detention ponds we have is about 18 acres, and it's probably about a quarter mile by about a quarter mile wide. So if I can locate myself on the berm right about midpoint, I can go from one end to the other and still capture what I need to and still maintain that eyesight of the aircraft.
When you're doing this in the field, do you have somebody out there to help you, or can you do it as a one-person operation?
I can do it as a one-person operation. I could extend my range if I had another person who was there to communicate with me while they maintained eyesight. So if for some reason it proved valuable to go beyond 1,000 feet from where I was standing, if I could locate someone nearby who could communicate with me and who can see the flight of the aircraft, I could do that. But I haven't needed to do that. The 1,000 feet I've had satisfies our needs very well.
Do you see opportunities to expand the application of this technology?
We would love to. There's one limitation. I'll talk about one limitation. And again, I'm in the flood control industry, so storm, rains is kind of my thing. You can't operate these in wet weather, moist weather even, because the aircraft's flight system is so very delicate that if it gets moist, it'll disrupt the electronic flight system. So we wanted to use it for mapping flood inundation areas, areas where we had some street flooding or something like that to get a sense of what's the total inundation area, but we can't do that. I mean, there's application for like land use studies, which would be very beneficial, getting a sense of what's typical land use in an area, in a segment of town or, you know, a geographical area. But it's whatever you need to document visually in an open environment, in an unobstructed environment. These are great tools.
So it sounds like you're not really using it for your particular application in what I would call built-up areas where there's a lot of development. It's open space and natural land forms.
Yeah. Flying these, you have to stay away from large groups of people from a safety standpoint, but also from a privacy standpoint. And I've kind of gotten a sense of this personally when I'm out. There are a lot of people who are very curious about it. There's this real kind of cultural paradigm or suspicious, I guess, among some people who aren't sure, aren't comfortable around this type of technology for privacy reasons, I think. And I notice that, you know, you get a lot of people that are very curious about it. I don't need it for those types of applications where there's a lot of people, which is good. My needs are more in the, like I said, the undeveloped natural areas, so I haven't had to deal with that too much.
Do you see in the near future more applications of unmanned aerial vehicles, particularly for infrastructure inspection?
Yeah. You know, our infrastructure involves detention ponds and rivers and streams. You know, I know electrical industry, power distribution, they have a lot of potential application for the high power lines that run for hundreds of miles where they could use a larger, more capable unmanned aerial vehicle that could travel longer distances and alleviate having to actually put somebody in a truck and having to go out. I know it's big in the agriculture industry for monitoring crops or soil erosion. You know, you get the sense that wherever you need to cover a large area, from an aerial perspective, these are so beneficial. I mean, they take out so much of the legwork and the visual perspective of being able to hover over your subject is just, it's priceless.
And it's, as you describe it, it sounds to me like you have the opportunity, if there's a need for a quick look at something, to get on the scene and grab that quick look and do a rapid assessment.
Possibly. If the environment, the landscape offers the opportunity, yes.
The reason I asked the question about other applications is it would seem to me that other people in the Denver Public Works Department might be banging on the door saying, I need to do this, because it looks like you're having fun and doing a good job with it as well.
Yeah, the people often say that. I'll tell you, it's not fun. It really isn't. When you know you got a $1,500 piece of aircraft, piece of machinery that's, you know, 100 feet off the ground, and it could come down at any time if you clip a branch or hit a power line or anything like that, tree, you know, it takes a lot of concentration. And it looks like fun, but it's not really fun.
But it sounds like you're applying a technology that has some real potential for saving money and doing a better job of managing infrastructure going forward.
Absolutely.
Kevin, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. I really appreciate the insights you've shared with us, and I look forward to the innovations that come out of the Denver Department of Public Works in the future.
Okay, thank you. It's been my pleasure.